You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
Chapter 35. Working their way through the dark tunnel, Hutt and Runagar had more difficulty than either anticipated, Runagar squeezing by Hutt and Lisam to be in the lead. Having been this way many times, the tunnel was second nature to the Shillito. Coaxing the birds onward in the gloomy, cramped space, Hutt quickly found that his skills with ravens were being put to a severe test. Eventually, a welcome slit of light knifed through a slim vertical cleft ahead. "Here we are," said Runagar, "but it was harder than I thought. Yesterday, on the way in, I took the two foxes through a larger tunnel. I chose this one today because it's a shorter route. Believe me, on the way back in, we'll go the longer way." To Hutt's surprise, Runagar burst into song. Four clear notes were repeated several times over in as beautiful a voice as Hutt had heard. Then the Shillito spoke quickly. "Stand clear and keep the birds out of the way." Something gigantic shuddered and began to move. Runagar ran ahead to a tall, vertical opening as it widened. Outlined by the sunlight beaming in, he peered through the opening, dwarfed by the slowly moving structures. In the dark, and with light breaking through, Hutt found it difficult to tell what was happening and became concerned about his friend's safety. As the rectangle of light grew wider, Hutt could see two massive doors rumbling open, and it was clear why he'd been told to stay back. They were moving ponderously in his direction. As the door on the left swung open, Runagar walked at its foot, a hand on the lowest portion. Once the doors were fully open, he motioned Hutt to proceed through a gaping exit to the outside world, and Hutt and two relieved ravens marched, blinking, into rays of early morning sunshine. Passing between the great doors, he saw that they were wood, and that their exterior surfaces were camouflaged by a collection of earth, tall grass, and thick shrubbery.
"Grass and shrubs," he thought, "growing on a wooden door?"
When all were outside, Runagar sang four notes again. The same ones, thought Hutt, in a different order. The immense doors shuddered again and began to close, and the party watched until the process was complete. Hutt had lots of questions.
"How do those doors work? Your song was a signal for them to open, wasn't it? But what powers them?"
"An ancient contrivance," said Runagar, "immense and powerful, partly mechanical, partly magic. No one today knows how it works, but it's never failed. Song is one of the signals to start or stop it."
"Why did you run to the doors as they opened?"
"Something dangerous might be outside, such as a wild animal. We make sure it's safe while they're opening. The process can be reversed at any moment."
"Why couldn't a Kirin from another clan activate them, even a human, if it happened to hear your song?"
"We aren't concerned about Kirins. If they know the song, they can use our entrance. It doesn't happen often, perhaps not often enough, because we enjoy guests. Humans live some distance to the north and are seldom in this vicinity. We've never had a problem with them."
"How do you grow grass and shrubbery on a door?"
"They aren't real, just good imitations."
"I'd say perfect," thought Hutt,
staring and finding no suggestion that they were artificial or that the entrance, now closed, even existed.
"Let's be on our way," said Runagar cheerily.
Hutt glanced about. They were in a stand of mature maple trees. The limbs and foliage were far too dense for the safe takeoff of a novice pilot, and he suggested they find a more open area. Runagar led them a short distance to a grassy plot. Hutt told the ravens they would be flying, Farallon with Runagar.
"Your mistress lies stricken," Hutt said to Farallon. "This Kirin rescued me, and it is his deep desire to fly on a great bird like you, but he's never flown. Thus your flight must be gentle. We cannot risk him falling, as did your mistress, through no fault of yours." Then Hutt gave Runagar a brief flying lesson, teaching him as many commands as he thought necessary, but trying not to overburden him. The enthusiastic Runagar learned swiftly, and in a short while Hutt felt he was ready. "Deliver your instructions loud and clear," said Hutt. "Since you're new to him, with wind whistling past his ears, they might be hard to understand. Most importantly, we must stay together." Hutt helped Runagar board the raven and situate himself properly. On a fox, a rider grips straps, but not here. Hutt positioned his companion's feet about the raven's neck so they would stabilize him and cause the bird no discomfort. Mounting Lisam, Hutt spoke to Runagar and the birds. "Remember, stay together. Runagar, give the command for departure." The Shillitoe did, and was awed by the length and breadth of Farallon's sable wings as he stretched and flexed them for the first time since yesterday. Beating their wings powerfully, the ravens lifted into the air, Runagar delighted as they ascended gracefully between a lofty evergreen and a tall oak. Leveling off above the trees, Hutt took the lead, then turned to watch his companion, who barked the command for straight-line flight. Farallon obeyed, and the birds were flying in tandem. Runagar tried to control his exhilaration, but both pupil and teacher were pleased with the results thus far. The morning was quiet, sunny, and cool, with only a gentle spring breeze, and they flew confidently across the countryside, Runagar in his glory. Hutt motioned for him to come alongside. Runagar thought for a moment, then gave one command for increased speed and another for a mild veer to the right, both of which Farallon executed perfectly. With Hutt on his left, Runagar instructed steady, straight-ahead flight. Onward they coursed, the raven's lustrous wings beating rhythmically, then resting as the birds glided, shimmering in the sunlight. To Runagar, these peaceful interludes seemed endless, until the wings began beating again. Hutt had purposefully gone to a comfortable but not excessive altitude. Growing more confident in Runagar, he settled back to enjoy the scenery, breathing fresh spring air. At this low an elevation, the terrain was moving quickly, the forest brilliantly green and full of animal life. Hutt saw a family of deer, common in the home forest, grazing on the bark of white cedar trees, but could observe them only briefly before they were left behind. Partly terrified, partly exhilarated, Runagar could scarcely believe what was happening. He was soaring through the air on a powerful winged creature, and passing beneath were pines, maples, oaks, rising hillsides and falling valleys, a creek wandering through a meadow dotted with wildflowers. Having long imagined what this would be like, in reality it was far better. Hutt wondered something. "Is Runagar acquainted with this part of the forest? Will he know how to get us back to the cave?" Hutt thought of the Volodon chase, during which everyone concentrated so intensely that no one knew where they were when it was over. Since then, the party had been free from attack. But he glanced in all directions, because Volodons and other terrifying creatures were doubtless lurking or speeding from near or far to pounce on Tali. Thankfully, he saw nothing threatening. He leaned toward Runagar. "You know where we are, don't you?" The Shillitoe had, of course, never observed the region from this perspective, but he pointed ahead. "There, it's the pond I swam in as a child. All my friends did. We came on foxes. It seemed so deep and wide, yet looks almost miniature from here. And it looks serene. But if the otters down there knew I was here, they'd put on quite a show and destroy its tranquility in a hurry." Fears allayed, Hutt settled back. Runagar had looked forward to this moment as long as he could remember, and Hutt knew how he felt, recalling his own exhilaration on the first day of the quest. He glanced about for the Barwood Grove. Deliani said that since his rescue, it had exploded with golden blossoms, an extraordinary event, but one making the grove exceedingly hazardous. Not intending to go near it, Hutt did want to see it, but couldn't locate it from this position and altitude. He began thinking,
Runagar's doing well. Perhaps we can go higher, where we can change direction and make wide turns without worrying about trees and hillsides. We could also see farther, possibly even glimpse the Barwood trees. But Runagar has never flown, and this flight has been brief. Yes, he's doing well, but he hasn't been challenged in the least. Nonetheless, he has a firm grip with his feet and is piloting a good raven easily.
Having not been master of a bird very long, Hutt wasn't fully aware of their depth and sensitivity. Yet Farallon was keenly aware of how his mistress had been injured. Nothing like it had ever happened to him, and his confidence was shaken. In the cave, he had seen Hutt, also stricken, reappear recovered. Yet his mistress did not, and it disturbed him to the core. But as an Ilon, he desired to please Kirin's, especially Hutt, a traveling party member. Farallon was conditioned to do what Hutt asked him to, and this new master as well. But deep down inside, his loyalty and concern were with Tali. Hutt's control of Lissom had become skillful, more skillful than he realized, and he exercised it now almost unconsciously. But Lissom was the only bird he had flown, and he was unaware of all the intricacies and subtleties of communication between Kirin and Ilon. Each Ilon species has its own capabilities. Squirrels climb trees nimbly and leap from branch to branch. A gray fox can move rapidly and ascend trees, but hardly become airborne. Ravens are limited on the ground, but in the air, climb, soar, and bank, activities alien to earthbound beings. A fox may travel fast or slow, and turn left or right. A bird in the air can do the same, but can also climb and descend. For a Kirin master, adding this third dimension changes everything. Lifting off and landing are, of course, solely in the domain of birds. Instructions for a bird must be different, more complex and comprehensive, and bird and master must act in total harmony. Hutt had given Runagar appropriate instructions. Concluding their brief session, however, Hutt did not realize that they weren't enough. Neither Runagar nor Farallon was prepared, and they were heading for trouble.
"Why not go higher?" Hutt asked the Shillito, who needed no convincing. "You remember how, don't you?"
"Of course," said a glowing Runagar. Hutt quietly told Lissom to raise their flight path slightly, and upward they went. Reviewing the commands briefly in his mind, Runagar gave the one for descent. Before Hutt knew it, Farallon was heading for a stand of birch trees. Circling downward, Hutt barked instructions, and hearing them, Runagar commanded elevation. Skimming the treetops, Farallon beat his wings strongly, and they ascended rapidly, air streaming past the Shillito. Hutt pursued and finally overtook them, telling Runagar he had climbed too high and should level off and slow down. Runagar and Farallon did, but sensing serious problems, Hutt suggested they turn back and return to the cave. The apprehensive Runagar almost agreed. Hutt thought about telling Farallon to follow him and leave Runagar out of the equation, but decided to give him one more chance. Hutt reminded him of the proper commands, but it was too late. Runagar called for a mild descent. His bird hesitated, then plunged steeply downward. Since the close call with the trees, bird and rider had lost the interdependence and synergy crucial for flight upon Ilon. Farallon had known they shouldn't approach the trees at the rate they were moving, yet responded to his new master's words. Chasing them, Hutt caught up with them and helped them out of their descent, but things went from bad to worse. For the first time in his life, Farallon had lost confidence in the Kirin aboard. As the flight went on, Runagar's orders were met with doubt and sometimes incorrectly interpreted. With each instruction, the Eilon wondered whether the rider intended the action called for. Runagar became more tentative and gave inaccurate commands. Trying to steer Lisam after the erratically careening pair, Hutt became frantic, calling instructions all the while, which, if anything, made matters worse. Had humans been watching, it would have been with great interest. What attraction did the lead bird have for the trailing one? Was it a courtship dance, an ardent male darting after a coy female? Did the first have something in its beak the second one wanted? Was the pursuing one angry because the other robbed its nest or attacked its young? In their wildest dreams, observers couldn't have envisioned the truth, and if they were veteran bird watchers, they might next have seen maneuvers they never had before. The panicky Farallon accelerated to a great height and soared, then swerved, spun rapidly, hovered with wings flapping wildly, dove steeply, then leveled off, and the erratic flight continued. "Hutt was right," thought Runagar, helpless and hanging on for dear life with arms and legs. "I got myself into this, and I'm not sure I'm going to get out." Hutt followed doggedly, fearing for his friend's life, visions of Tally's fate running through his addled mind. Recalling that Lisam carried him away from the barwood tree in her beak, Hutt suddenly had an idea. Could she possibly do that here with the runaway Runagar? The attempt would be hazardous, to say the least. The birds might collide, Runagar or Hutt being dislodged. Runagar might fall from her beak. But Hutt could think of no alternative and had to try. "Runagar rescued me," he thought. "I must try to rescue him." "I'm going to ask you to do something difficult," Hutt told Lisam. "Concentrate on Farallon's master. He's in danger. When I tell you to, grasp him by his garments and lift him up and away from harm. You did it with me. You can do it again." Wind whistling past his ears, Hutt directed her to follow closely, and she trailed them, Hutt waiting for the right moment. Finally, Farallon came out of a series of convoluted turns and was drifting below, exhausted. "Now!" cried Hutt. Lisam dove and didn't level off until just above the other bird. There she glided and did something Hutt did not anticipate, making her wings beat in concert with Farallon's so they would not make contact. Then she edged her way downward. Suddenly her wings stopped moving, and she glided above Farallon as if in a trance. Hutt heard something from below, a voice, and one he would never forget. Leaning over, he strained to see what was happening. A chant, unlike anything he had heard, was coming from the auburn-haired Runagar, and somehow Farallon appeared under his control, his wings not moving. Though unintelligible to Hutt, Runagar's strange words were obviously meaningful to the ravens. In addition to Farallon, they appeared to be controlling Lisam. But the voice amazed Hutt more than the words. It was a gentle yet penetrating monotone, deep-throated and persuasive. The birds flew calmly, one above the other, wings now moving normally and in unison. Suddenly the voice ceased. Lisam shook her head and flapped her wings briskly as if coming out of a trance, then broke away, flying normally. Hutt directed her to stay near Farallon. Runagar called to Hutt in his usual voice. "I am controlling my raven." Hutt knew that, but had no idea how, and didn't ask. "We must land," he said. "Definitely," said Runagar. Taking no chances, Hutt instructed Farallon to follow Lisam to the ground. Spying a grassy knoll, he directed Lisam toward it, and Farallon followed. When they touched down, Hutt jumped off and rushed to Runagar's side. "It was my fault," said Hutt. "You weren't prepared, but you turned things around and controlled both of them. How?" "My fault, too," said Runagar, pale and shaking. I talked you into this, but here's what happened. When I felt most helpless and hopeless, something welled up inside me I didn't know was there. My voice changed, and I could will the bird to act. Many words came in a tongue I haven't used for years, one the queen taught us when we were children. Its origins were in an ancient curlace magic intended to thwart troublesome birds and animals. I thought I'd forgotten it, but it came forth when I needed it most. My father and grandfather have talked about that kind of magic, but we were never taught the language. Runagar paused. But something else happened. Some words were in the old language, but some were not. Some I've never before heard were mingled with those I learned. I don't know where they came from. I was as astonished by the whole thing as you must have been. He slid down off Farallon, shaking his head. I must tell the queen everything that happened. Voice is at the heart of our magic. We've preserved many magical tongues and rituals relating to voice. Then he said something Hutt could never have expected. Flying's the most enjoyable thing I've ever done. I was born to fly. I'd love to go again. You came through that wanting to go again? You said I was a sorry sight in the Barwood Grove. He pointed skyward. You should have seen yourself up there. If I had another chance to go, I'd take more time and learn properly.
To go again, right now, is as good a time as any. We have to get home. But we'll both ride on Lisam. You might be able to control Farallon with your voice, but next time I'd prefer a more conventional method.
They boarded Lisam, Hutt in front. He told Farallon to follow, and they lifted off. Recalling the Volodon chase, after passing Runagar's pond on the way here, Hutt had memorized features of the landscape to help them find their way back. During their recent topsy-turvy chase, they only went in circles.
I'll get us to your pond, he said. You take it from there. I'm eager to get home.
He realized the way in which he was referring to the Shillitoe Cave.
I want to see Tally, Speckeron, and Deliani.
He wondered about Tally and the sap he had procured. By now it might be distilled and administered, and have begun to stir her from slumber. He pictured Speckeron at the bedside, pensive, waiting for her to awaken. Hutt was there himself, in his own picture. Then he realized something. Deliani wasn't. He was puzzled, but dismissed her absence as unimportant.
After all, he thought, it's just a figment of my imagination.
But it wasn't. He had just experienced a fleeting throwback to the past, when Kirin's could look into past and future. He had glimpsed the future, but would have been alarmed had a further glimpse shown what fate had befallen Deliani.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
To learn more about Kirin's, visit www.kirinbooks.com.
You have been listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.